remember the end of Joshua, they had done all the major conflicts. The people on the east side of the Jordan had gone back. But down in the south, Judah, Simeon, they had a lot of success. But then as you moved on up the countryside, Manasseh, Ephraim had quite a bit of success in the central part of the country. But as you get up to the north part, those last four or five tribes up there, Naphtali, Issachar, Zebulun, Asher, basically no success at all. So over a period of time, we find the people getting involved with the gods and so forth of the people round about them, just like God had said they would do if they did not drive them out. And as a result, he allowed people to come in and began to oppress them, and I wish this thing would work. There we go. Began to have people to oppress them, and the first country that came in was Mesopotamia. And over the next 8 years, they were oppressing the children of Israel. But then God allowed Othniel, the nephew of Caleb, to come in and go out and fight against the king of Mesopotamia. Freddie, my tongue's not quick enough to pronounce this name, so y'all just have to say the king of Mesopotamia. So they came out and fought against him and actually defeated him as the first oppressor. Then we came along and another group of people, and who would that be? Come in and set up camp, took over the city of the Palms, where the, by the way, who had lived there at one time? The Kenites, the descendants of Moses' in-laws. In chapter 1 and verse 16, it talks about most of the Kenites had actually joined forces with Judah and Simeon as they came trying to drive out the inhabitants. But over time, the Moabites came in and seized the city of Palms. And then we will find we're going to find, and I punched it twice, I thought it wouldn't get there. So the second judge that came to rule over the people and deliver them was a man by the name of Ehud, who was left-handed. And I'll try to punch it one time. Now, everybody speak up. We got 105 questions to go. Freddie covered 95. Surely we can get 105. So, where did the first, where, and I'm not going to say 1, 2, or 3. Somebody speak up. And if you feel uncomfortable with having an incorrect answer, get rid of that, because there's one in this series of questions. And it's our job to find out which one it is. So, all right. So where did a person normally carry their sword? Left side. But did this man? No. Ehud carried his on the other side because he was left-handed. And he said, I've got a message from who? For you? A message from God for you. All right. So he goes ahead and blows his what? Calling for the Israelites to come help him. The trumpet. I'll get used to not punching this. So, after Ehud, who was our next judge? Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar. All right, good. Now, Israel turned from God and began to serve who? of what? Idols, okay. Now, Jabin, his captain, was a fellow by the name of Sisera, okay. Now, old Barak, he knew he needed to go and fight. But he tells Deborah, who was the judge, by the way, at this particular time, says, now, I'm going to go and fight against this guy under one condition. What was that condition? That you go with him. All right. Now, what I talked about the Kenites, most of them moving from the city of the plains down to the southern part, Judah. But this particular story involves, really is up in Naphtali. That's where that country is at. The story involves Heber's wife. So as the battle took place, so Sisera, he gets up there, he's in his chariot, there's been a lot of rain, so his chariot gets stuck in the mud, he jumps out, and he runs and hides. Come on. He ran to the tent of Heber, the Kenite, and I gave that one away, didn't I? Heber the Kenite, the one who had separated himself from the rest of the Kenites and moved up to the north. And so he goes in, and what is he looking for? He asked for some water, but what did she give him? She gave him milk. The man was tired. He lays down, goes to sleep, and what happened? Okay. Jael took a nail and drove it through his temple. So Jael is the wife of Heber the Kenite. So you see the connection still back to the children of Israel, even though this man had separated and gone up north near Kadesh. There was still some alliance between his family and the Israelites. And this basically ended, if I remember correctly, it said after that there were no more of the Canaanite kings who joined forces to fight against the children of Israel. So it was a rather large accomplishment by this lady. Okay, now we move on to the next judge, Gideon. And what was Gideon doing? Where was he hiding to keep from being seen by those people who came in each year and just invaded the countryside? He was in the wine press, pressing out some wheat when God, or the angel of God, appeared to him. Now, over a period of time, Gideon had to have a lot of things to convince him. He said, the first message was, thou mighty man of, he said, mighty man, me? Are you talking to me? And so he asked for sign after sign, and I gave that one away, as God tried to convince him that he was to go out and lead his people, against the enemy. Okay. So they were fighting against the Midianites, and where was the Midianite army camped? Remember what valley? Valley of Jezreel. And of course, that was up kind of in the northern part, right under Zebulun, Issachar, and so forth. So, they were camped, and they were just as thick as the sand of the sea, just a large number of them. So, Gideon started out with how many men? He called had a call for the people of Israel to come and help him fight. At how many thousand? 32,000 people. God said, that's too many. So he says, now, you tell anybody who is afraid that they go home. Now, how many did he have left after that? I said I'd be amongst that number. How many? 10,000. So Bill found the missed question. Yeah. Judges chapter 7 verse 3. Actually 22,000 went home when he said anybody who's afraid or fearful. So it left 10,000 people. God still said, that's too many. So he has another test. How many were chosen after they were told to go down to the water, and deciding, depending on how they drank, those who lapped up water with their hand, how many was left? 300. So started with 32,000, ended up with 300 men. And these 300 were divided into how many companies as they surrounded the camp of the Midianites? Divided into three companies. Now, they were armed rather heavily for warfare. What did they have? What did each one of them have? That's what you call being prepared for war. You got a trumpet. You got a pitcher. And you got a torch. But they were really armed well because God was on their side. So at Gideon's command, all of them blew their trumpet, broke their pitcher, revealed the torch. And the Midianites, thinking they were surrounded by a large army, began to fight among themselves, killing many of them. But a lot of them fled and began crossing over the Jordan River. And so Gideon came to the Jordan, and they were exhausted, exhausted. And what else were they? They were exhausted and what? Hungry. So, he asked a couple of groups of people for some food and water. But the first city he came to, the question that these leaders asked, well, have you captured these guys yet? They were afraid to help Gideon until those Midianite princes were what? Captured. And what was the first city he came to? Succoth on the east side of Jordan. And then he also, the next one he came to was Peniel. And both of those cities refused to give his troops' supplies or any help. And so he said, I'm going to come back, and I'm going to... What kind of punishment did he issue to them? You're going to whip them with what? Thorns, briars, you know, whatever. He said, I'm going to take care of you. Both of the cities he promised to take care of them when he came back. And he does come back and show them that he had captured the enemies. So, as a result, he does take care of both of those cities. Now, he said, he told the people, he said, now all I want out of the loot that's been taken is what? The gold earrings. So they throw all their gold earrings into a pile, and he ends up making a what out of the gold that came from that. Yeah. Okay. But that seemed to cause a problem later on. How many sons did Gideon have? 70 sons and many wives. And after his death, Israel turned back again to idols, serving Baal and so forth. So, there's another one that we normally list, another man that we normally list as a judge, but he was never called a judge. Who was that fellow by the name of Abimelech? Okay. Abimelech was not what you call an outstanding citizen in many ways. He actually goes and talks to the men of Succoth, where his mother was from. Shechem, you're right. Okay, Shechem. But Abimelech was the son of Gideon by his wife, concubine. And as Freddy points out, he goes and talks to the men of Shechem and convinces them to help him become, quote, ruler or judge. But over a period of time, those people actually turn against him. And this man by the name of Gaal actually challenges Abimelech to come out and fight. And that was a bad mistake, because Abimelech destroyed the city of Shechem. He goes on over to another town by the name of Thebes, and he's approaching a tower. And what happens to him? A woman throws a millstone, hits him on the head, and crushes his skull, and he asks that one of his armor bearers actually kill him. So that put an end to Abimelech. So our next judge was Jephthah. And did I miss one? No. Okay. Jephthah was also kind of an outcast in a lot of respects. He had gone over to across the east of Jordan to Gilead, but the people of Israel came over and asked him to come back to what city? His home in, better if missed, but. And so he comes back after some conversation and begins to, help deliver the children of Israel. But, what came out to meet him after the battle. He had made a vow that whoever comes out to meet me after God gives me a deliverance, then I will do certain things to it. Who came at the medium? His daughter. Unfortunately, his daughter. And so he said, I've opened my mouth and I can't go back on my word. So he recognized the fact that he had made a vow. And of course, the law was, when thou vowest a vow, defer not to pay it. So he said, I've opened my mouth. I can't go back on my word. And now we see the response of the daughter. Do unto me as you have vowed. So, she said, I have one request though. Let me go along with my friends. Where would I want to go? To the mountains. Okay. And so he allows that to happen. So she went with her companions and stayed. How long? 2 months. Okay. Now these next questions, he did according to her, according to his vow. Now the next 4 or 5 questions dealt with whether or not he actually put her to death or did not. And Freddie went through some of those things, whether or not he did or did not. So, but he pointed out that God had always commanded a burnt offering had to be totally burned. Human sacrifices were always an abomination to Jehovah. Burnt offering could only be male. And there were women who did service at the door of the tent of meeting. And if he had offered his daughter, then his lineage would be, they would be totally dedicated to God. And the lineage of Jephthah would be lost in Israel. So, whether he did or not, I guess is debatable. But, after all of this was said and done, this group of people from the tribe of Ephraim, and this is not the only time we saw that happen, they came and wanted to know What was their complaint against Jephthah? Yeah, why didn't you ask us to come and help fight against the Midianites? Well, he had a rebuttal for that. I asked you and you didn't do anything about it. You refused to come. So now here you are complaining because I didn't ask you, because we took a lot of loot. We took a lot of spoils from those people as we defeated them. So Jephthah, he does not take to their requests too kindly, so he calls the men of Gilead. Remember, he had gone over across the Jordan River to Gilead. So he goes back and calls people where he had kind of been living here in the land of Tob, and he says, we'll take care of you. So he calls those people together, and they take care of the Ephraimites. In fact, several thousand were killed. This is a contrast to what Gideon had done. They had complained to Gideon earlier about not being involved and so forth. And of course, Gideon didn't know which way the Midianites and so forth were going to run, so he didn't ask him, but he said, look what you've done. You captured two of the princes as they guarded the fords of the Jordan. But Jephthah, he just gets an army and goes out and whips these pretty people pretty good. So the Ephraimites seem to be a little temperamental people, kind of wanting to be the big dog on the block, seemed like most of the time. Now we're going to shift our attention to Samson, one of the three last judges we have in the book of Judges. So he goes and finds a wife in what city? Timnah, which was really located right on the northern border of the tribe of Judah, right up next to Dan. He saw her, he liked her, and he asked his father to get her wife. You remember the riddle he set before the companions at the wedding feast? They could not solve it. And so as a result, he has to go and let it be known to his bride or bride-to-be. And as a result, he has to go and kill a bunch of Philistines over in the next city and bring those goods back as he had promised he would. He goes home in a rage, pretty much pretty upset. So while he's gone, his wife's father actually does what? Yeah, he gives his wife to one of his companions at the wedding feast. So, Samson comes back later on and wants to go visit his wife. Well, he gets there and father-in-law says, "Oh, sorry, I've given her to one of your friends." So Samson goes out and catches how many foxes? 300 foxes, tie their tails together, and goes out and turns these animals loose in the standing grain fields, and that must have been some sight as their crops burned up. So the Philistines, in retaliation, they go to his father-in-law's house, the Timnite, and burns it, and also his daughter. Now, you remember they had promised to do that if they could not solve that riddle that he had put before them. So the end came out to be the end result came out to be the same. Now, Samson said, I'm not gonna stop here. I'm gonna finish the deal. He said, I'm gonna get my revenge on you for what you have done. So, these, Philistines, they're pretty upset about what's been happening, apparently. And so they come and they talk to a group of people from what tribe? What tribe did they ask, why have you come to fight? Okay, they had gone to the Philistines. Remember, they were located primarily over on the Mediterranean Sea along the property that belonged to Judah. So they come and they're about ready to whoop up on the tribe of Judah. And Judah's saying, well, what's going on? And so they said, we want Samson. That's what the Philistines said. So 3,000 men from Judah went to a what? Where was Samson hiding? He was hiding in a cave. And so as they talked with him, he says, I want you to swear to me that you will not do what if I go with you. Okay, he said, I don't want you to kill me. I'll go with you. And so he goes with him, and as they approach, and this is something maybe we didn't talk about, the city of Lehi, where the Philistines were camped, they got all excited because here comes our enemy, Samson. But little did they know. So they carry Samson to, Samson goes to Gaza to see what on this particular occasion. A harlot. And while he's there, the Philistines said, "Ah, we've got him now. We're going to close the gates of the city. And at what point in time are we going to take care of this fellow? At sunrise, we're going to be catch him. He can't get out of the city." Well, that was a bad assumption too. So he just takes the gates, pulls up the post, carries him out on the hilltop, heading down toward the city of Hebron, which is down in the where Caleb had his inheritance. So Samson meets another woman, and this is the one that we normally associate with Samson. Do I hear Delilah? And as they carry on their love affair, she was told by the Philistines, "You get him to tell you where his source of great strength, what allows him to be so much stronger than an ordinary man." And so she asked him, says, "You know, you tell me why you're so strong and how you can be bound." And so he kind of plays a little game with her. After about three attempts, he would say, "Tie me this way," and then as soon as she would say the Philistines are coming, he would just break whatever he had told her to bind her with. And she said, "All you've done is make fun of me. You just make fun of me. Now, if you really, have you guys ever heard this before? If you really love me, if you really love me, tell me, you just can't, how can you say you love me and treat me this way? You're just making a laughing stock of me." So Samson finally breaks down and he says, "My hair has never been cut. I've kept the Nazarite vow from my youth." So he makes a grave mistake. And he said, "If I were what shaven, I would become weak like any other man." So his head is shaven. The Philistines sees him. And what do they do to him? Put out his eyes, put him in prison, and makes him almost like a beast of burden at that particular time. But over time, his hair begins to grow back to some degree. We don't know how much. But in the meantime, they declared that their God had delivered Samson into their hands rather than him attending. But Samson, eventually, he's in the old temple. They're having a big feast. And he prays to God to give him his strength one more time. And he puts his arms around the two pillars of the temple. And so God does give him his strength back. And he said he broke the pillars and killed more in his death than during his whole lifetime. Now, the men from what tribe came back and took Samson's body and buried him? We may not have talked much about this. The people from the tribe of Dan, and that's where he was from. Zorah was his home city, or at least his father's, and that was located in the tribe of Dan over near the Mediterranean coast. just north of the tribe of Judah. So those people came and took his body and buried it. Now, we went into the book of 1 Samuel, and we find a man of Elkanah who had two wives, and we're running out of time. But then Hannah prayed to Jehovah for her son. She promised to give. Eli thought she was drunk because he could not hear when she was praying. She promised to give that son back to Jehovah, and she kept him at home until he was weaned. And Eli had two wicked sons, Hophni, Phinehas. One night God called Samuel and told him the fate of Eli and his sons. And the Philistines came against the Israel, and the Ark of the Covenant, after the Israelites were defeated the first time, they brought the Ark of the Covenant into the camp, thinking that was going to do the trick. But in reality, the Philistines captured the Ark. And when Eli heard about it, then he fell back, broke his neck, and died at age 98. The Philistines put an ark in the house of Dagon, their god. Of course, you remember how it fell over, was broken, and so forth. And eventually, they sent it back on an ox cart. The children, they also sent a gift of 5 gold rats and 5 tumors. And the ark was placed in the house of Abinadab. And Eliezer, his son, was put in charge of that. Israel came to Samuel and said, give us a king so we can be like everybody else, because his two sons that were judging down in the southern part were evil. And now we go to the sermon, I think. Has the bell rung yet? Okay, this is what Freddie covered. The man, Micah, who lived up in the hill country of Ephraim, he had idols or images in his house. There was a Levite who lived in Bethlehem, Judah, came out looking for his fortune, and he came to the house of Micah. Micah asked him to come and be a father and a priest, and he took him up, and he became like one of Micah's sons. Now the tribe of Dan, though they were running out of space, the Amorites had pushed them back up into the corner. So they were looking for new territory. And as they go and check out some place where they can go to alleviate the problem, they go up to Laish, which is right up where we talked about jail driving the nail in that general area. And they asked counsel of God. He said, go. They sent 5 men. They came to Micah's house. They took the ephod and the teraphim. And he goes and follows after him and says, why have you taken my gods? And since he was outnumbered, he got to go back to the house without anything. So the Danites built the city up there and named it Dan. Judges about 350 years. Elimelech is the man that, because of a drought or famine in Bethlehem, carried his family to Moab. And this was a statement that Boaz made to Ruth about her, you're a virtuous woman. They moved to, had 2 sons, Mahlon and Chilion. And all 3 of the men died, Elimelech, Mahlon, and Chilion. And then she wanted them to go back to their mother's house. They met together and wept. This is the verse, entreat me not to leave thee, where you go, I will go. Where thou lodgest, thou will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. And the 2 go back to Bethlehem. She goes to in the barley season goes to glean in the fields, and it happens to be Boaz. He has her to go and rest for a while with the maidens and so forth. Sorry. I can't talk as fast as I need to be from Boston or somewhere, I guess, instead of from Athens. Appreciate your patience today and appreciate the comments and so forth throughout the quarter. And I think that'll do us for this time.